Chapter 13. Incredible that such a day had the temerity to even begin, that the sun would even dare to rise upon the elements that were locking into place below it, elements that one of the defense attorneys would later argue constituted a perfect storm. Unusually, J.C. had risen early that December morning, Morgan and Bob having finally convinced him to come with them to try and tempt some of the really big catfish out of the pool up at the head of Big Lake. They'd set off in the old Jeep just before dawn, the only light from the main house, the glow of red, yellow, and blue bulbs from the big Christmas tree in the hall. Yeah, J.C. hated making a fuss over his birthday, but you had to play ball for the kids. J.C. rubbing his eyes in the back seat of the Jeep and fumbling with the cap for the flask of coffee Morgan had brought. Jesus had slept badly, a low, light drowse he kept waking up from, being pulled up out of shallow sleep by a far-off growling noise, like something was out there, deep in the woods, circling. At 7:22 a.m., just as Special Agent Enrico Palo of the BATF's SWAT team cut through the old, rusting barbed wire on the southern perimeter, his 24-year-old heart pumping, having to stop himself from grinning, alive with the excitement that, after nearly 2 years on the squad, he was finally not only going in on a live raid, he was in the lead team. J.C., Morgs, and Bob were dropping their lines into the cold, dark water about a mile and a half from the main house. Becky and the boys were sleeping late, the door to Miles and Danny's bedroom left open a little because Miles didn't like the dark. He liked the soft light of the big Christmas tree in the hall falling across his bed, reminding him that Santa was just around the corner. The Rennett brothers were up early too that day, down at the makeshift garage, where they'd finally towed that pickup. Deke had got a new transmission, and they figured if they got it in by late morning, then Deke would drive the truck over to Austin with Pat following in his Dodge. They'd sell it for a nice profit and be back with the extra Christmas money by nightfall. Pat zippered up his overalls and the headlights, shivering and yawning, while Deke rooted around on the floor of the pickup for the wrench, shoving the big old Remington 306 along the back seat. They always brought the hunting rifle with them when they came down here to work. You never knew what edible wildlife you'd run into on the way back. The coolest heads far away. Young, excitable men in combat gear ready to see action. Children sleeping in a wood frame house. A couple of good old boys with last night's beer still thick in their veins and a high-powered rifle by their side. A perfect storm, indeed. Palo lagging just behind team leader Sergeant Anthony Berkowitz as they come through the woods, 15 of them spread out, dressed in black camo, M16s cocked and locked, and carried combat ready. 9mm pistols on their hips, flash grenades on their belts, all of it bought and paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. Taxpayers like the ones they are advancing on now. Brown leaves and tiny branches crushing softly underfoot. Palo and the others stopping in their tracks just short of the edge of the tree line and dropping down as the sarge raises a clenched, gloved fist silently in the air. Something up ahead, light and noise a few hundred yards away across the open ground. Palo checks his watch. It has taken them just over 10 minutes to cover the half mile through the woods. Right on schedule. The B team should be in position by the wire near the main gates now.
Motherfucker,
Pat Rennett says from under the truck as, with a final grunt, he wrenches the bolt off the casing and takes out the old trans. He passes it up to Deke, who bends over to examine it in the headlight.
Yeah. Deke says, shot to hell, all right.
Give me that rag down, will you? His brother says. Fucking oil everywhere. Deke moves around the front of the pickup to grab a rag from the box by the passenger side front wheel and stops as he glances off into the dark woods.
Shit,
Deke Rennett whispers. A couple of miles away, Morgan says, laughing,
And remember that time, that dressing room in Denver, where some filthy, nasty motherfucker had taken a shit in the goddamn shower stall?
Oh, man, Jesus says, laughing too. And the promoter thought it was one of us?
Who were we playing with that night? Scud Mountain Boys?
Nah, wasn't it Slint?
Slint, that's right.
Frag,
Bob says softly, holding a finger to his lips, nodding towards the water.
Sorry, Bob, Jesus whispers.
Shit,
Morgan says, quietening down too.
Don't you miss touring, man?
We'll get back to it, Jesus says.
We'll get back to it.
Here, pass that coffee over, Morgs. Becky yawns and rolls over in her sleep, dozing, but knowing it's getting to the time when the boys will be awake. One part of her mother hearing already tuned towards them. She loves this time of the morning now, because she knows that it wasn't always this way. A few years back, before she met JC and the guys, when she was still drinking and hitting the pipe, some days she'd come round on the kitchen floor with Danny slapping her awake and Miles looking on, scared and nervous, like he thought she'd died. She'd nearly lost them, the boys. The thought of them winding up state-raised is still enough to flash a cold sweat over her and to remind her just how much she values this, waking up fresh and clean and sober and there for them. She eyes the clock by the bed. 7:33. She has some banking stuff to do up in Brunsville this morning, and then she's going Christmas shopping with Pete and Claude.
Cold out there.
10 more minutes. Her foot finds a warm spot.
Where?
Pat elbowing forward under the truck, his head and shoulders coming out by the tire. Deke crouched down out of the headlight beam, pointing towards the woods.
There,
Deke says. Both brothers, straining in the half-light, scanning the tree line.
Probably just a fucking deer,
Pat whispers.
Wasn't no deer. Who in the hell is gonna be out in the...
Pat snaps the word off as he sees a black shape moving fast, darting between two trees, something glinting in its hand.
Fuck,
he hisses.
Fuck, get the...
Way ahead of you, brother,
Deke says, reappearing at Pat's elbow now, the big Remington cradled in his arms, the bolt going back with an oily clack as he chambers around and starts moving towards the door.
Careful,
Pat says.
Shit, there's lots of them.
Another shape moving in the darkness.
Hunting rifle,
the Sarge whispers back.
I got a shot.
Palo tells the Sarge as he looks at Deke Rennett's head in the crosshairs of his infrared scope.
Do not fire unless fired upon,
the Sarge whispers.
Robertson, see if you can get up around there and come in behind.
Hey! Deke's voice booms out. Whoever the fuck you are, come on out of those trees right now!
Shit,
the Sarge whispers. Split second. Take them out, but give away surprise with several hundred yards to go to the main compound. Fall back into the woods and tell the B team to go in first? Abort?
Fire a warning shot,
Pat whispers to Deke. Deke tilts the rifle at the treetops and
boom!
The high-caliber weapon shatters the dawn silence,
and all hell breaks loose.
A barrage of automatic fire blazes from the woods, tearing into the cinderblock garage, sending Deke scrambling backwards behind the truck. Pat rolling out from under it as lead whips a few feet above their heads, ding, ding, dinging through the truck they had about finished fixing up.
Jesus Christ!
Pat yells.
What the fuck is that?
Jesus says, he and Morgan standing up as one. Bob is already whipping past them, sprinting through the trees for the Jeep, knowing exactly what a dozen or so M16s firing together sounds like. Becky, leaping out of bed and heading for the boys' room. Claude looking up from the row of winter squashes he's tending up on the farm. People waking up all over, in their cabins, Quonset huts, and yurts.
"Come on!"
Deke says, taking his brother by the elbow. The Rennett brothers coming barreling out of the back door and down a little hill, under cover now, and sprinting for the main house as, behind them, bullets tear the garage to pieces.
"Get to the fucking gun room!"
Deke yells at Pat, a few years younger and always a few yards ahead of him, before he turns, crouches, and caps off around in the vague direction of the woods.
"Raven, this is Falcon!"
Berkowitz is screaming into his radio, concussion in his ears, cordite in his nostrils.
"We are under fire! Repeat, we are under fire! Move in! Move in!"
A Bradley tank, a fucking tank, crashing through the fencing a few hundred yards north of the main house now. SWAT troopers pouring in behind it, throwing themselves onto their bellies, seeking cover as an astonished Claude watches from the farm. JC and Morgan holding on tight as Bob takes the muddy, potholed track at 60 miles per, the shots they've been hearing muffled now by the roar of the engine, audible again in the tiny gaps of silence when Bob drops down to shift gear. A deer leaping out of their way, the farmhouse out of sight, just over the next hill. Berkowitz's aid team coming up the path from the south, running hard, bringing a second front down on the farmhouse. A sleepy teenage boy wandering out of one of the Quonset huts into their path, getting a rifle butt in the stomach and his face forced down into the dirt and told to stay there. Deke and Pat Rennett in the gun room, Deke smashing the window with the barrel and leveling the Remington at one of the black figures, elbowing his way along the muddy bank near the main gate. Pat behind him, working a crowbar into the metal doors of the gun cabinet.
"Hurry the fuck up!" Deke screams. "There's hundreds of them!"
"Sir, weapon at 2 o'clock,
a trooper says, seeing the long barrel from behind the Bradley, just as Deke's finger tightens on the trigger. Deke squeezes a shot off, missing the guy, and half a second later, half a dozen M16s start emptying in the direction of the gun room. 5.56mm rounds shredding through the wooden house, slamming into the big cinder blocks. Becky screaming, Miles crying as she gets the boys under their bed.
"Stay here,"
she says, and starts crawling towards the gunfire.
"Mommy! Mommy!"
Claude running full tilt down the path towards the troopers, pitchfork still in hand, shouting,
"Hey! Hey, what the fuck? What the fuck?"
above the gunfire and the diesel roar of the Bradley. He is less than 100 yards from the troopers when one of them sees that pitchfork. Just seeing a guy running towards him with a long rifle-like shape in his hands, the words he will use later at the trial, and he raises his M16 and puts a short burst through Claude's chest. Claude dead before he hits the ground. 3 holes the size of oranges across his lungs. Berkowitz on the radio again.
"Multiple shooters! Send Eagles! Repeat, send Eagles!"
The Jeep coming skidding around the final bend, JC's and Morgan's jaws dropping as they see the battlefield ahead of them, the tank maneuvering clumsily in front of the farmhouse, skeins of silver-blue gun smoke drifting on the pale morning air, the crackle of automatic weapons, the thud, thud, thud of rounds hitting the wooden structure.
"What the fuck?"
Jesus is saying as Bob floors it, doing 80 straight downhill now. Becky crawling into the gun room just as Pat Rennett tears the door off the gun cabinet. Deke behind him capping off with the Remington, working the bolt and just holding it above his head to fire.
"What the fuck are you doing?"
Becky screams. Pat, ignoring her, pulling out their confiscated AR-15, setting it to semi-auto with trembling hands. Becky hears something smashing beside her head and just has time to register that a bullet has gone through the glass door of the office a couple of feet to her right before she throws herself at Pat, grabbing the gun.
"Put that down! You're going to get us all fucking killed!"
"Lady, we are being attacked!"
Rennett yells as they tussle over the rifle.
"Give me the fucking gun!"
Becky screams. Pat tugs the gun away and smacks Becky sharply in the face with the butt, breaking her nose, sending her sprawling in broken glass and shell casings. He throws himself against the wall by the window, yelling, "Yeehaw! Get some!" and cutting loose as the air fills with an ominous shuck and thump. Jesus, Morgan, and Bob piling out of the Jeep and throwing themselves onto the ground as, all at once, they see Becky come stumbling out of the back door, blood streaming down her face while, with an explosion of noise, two helicopter gunships clatter over the roof of the farmhouse, each one bristling with ordnance. "Surreal," Jesus thinks. "This is just surreal." He grabs Becky. "Bex, what the fu-" shouting over the chopper blades, the gunfire, the roar of the tank. "The Rennets," she says nasally, pinching the bridge of her nose. "The gun cabinet, they..." Right then, a guy they don't even know, who JC vaguely recognizes as someone who arrived a couple of weeks ago, comes running out of the house with a rifle in his arms and starts firing at the helicopters, blazing away in open view. He goes down in a hail of bullets from the nearest chopper as the two ugly black beasts dip their noses towards the ground and then scatter away across the fields, the backdraft nearly knocking them off their feet. A SWAT trooper comes tearing around the corner and is leveling his rifle when there's a staccato burst of gunfire right behind them, and the trooper goes down. They turn to see Pat Rennett disappearing back into an upstairs window. "Oh no, oh fuck, fuck, fuck," Jesus is saying, and now there's a roaring noise, a searing heat, the clanking of metal, and the Bradley comes around the corner, a jet of flame from its turret licking along the side of a wall, the wooden farmhouse going up like tinder. "The boys!" Becky screams. Morgan is huddling down against the concrete base of the water tower, his head in his hands, crying. "What are you doing?" Jesus screams at the tank, stepping towards it, his arms extended as bullets whip all around them. In response to JC's advance, the machine gun mounted to the right of the Bradley's flamethrower begins to swivel around towards them. "No," Big Bob thinks, "way wrong time." He knows well his friend's insistence on reason, his near inexhaustible willingness to meet hatred and malevolence with love and understanding. But Bob knows what happens in firefights, those pockets of hell where men switch off things like reason and understanding and plug straight into the reptilian core. No mistake, these people mean to kill them. Just as the tank's machine gun, Bob recognizes it as a 7.62mm, opens up, taking fist-sized bites out of the concrete wall of the rec room behind them, Bob throws himself into JC and Becky, driving both of them down beside Morgan, into the drainage ditch that runs along the wall of the house, JC's head piling into the breeze block lower wall, knocking him out cold. Bob pushing Becky down on top of him, cramming those he loves into that safe space down behind the water tower. It is Bob's moment now. In many senses, his whole life has been but a prelude to this moment. The whooping chopper blades, the stinging clouds of cordite, the rattle of the M16s, the smell of fire, the screaming of the terrified and the wounded. Home again. Bob, moving eerily fast now for a man of 60, throwing himself into a low run, quickly getting inside the tank's range, the coaxial machine gun unable to follow him. Bob's mind slipping so fast into old patterns, looking for defilades, working out fields of fire, escape routes, instinctively hugging the building hot, burning inside, as an automatic rifle opens up somewhere nearby and he throws himself headlong into the drainage ditch, pulling the body of the dead trooper Pat Rennett shot into the ditch with him, and snapping the strap on the guy's M16 off, pulling extra clips out of the guy's webbing belt. Bob grabs a peek above the ridge and sees two SWAT troopers running towards him, one reloading, one already aiming at him. Bob firing two short, controlled bursts from his shoulder, and both guys going down. Bob, not watching them fall, already heading back the way he came. Bob throwing himself through the ragged, shot-out window frame, cutting himself up pretty good and landing on his ass in the back hallway that connects the main house with the schoolroom. Hot as hell in here, and someone screaming. Heavy footsteps coming towards him through the smoke and flames. Pat Rennett running along, holding a shotgun now, working the pump, screaming, "Yeah, yeah!" His eyes glittering, crazed, combat fried. A look Bob last saw beside some river near the Cambodian border nearly 40 years ago. Bob crouches and shoots him straight through the face from about 50 feet, a crimson spray, and Pat vanishing. Into a low run again, bullets ripping through the wood just above him, down towards the big hall where he can see the Christmas tree, a 30-foot-high blaze. Bob's eyebrows and beard crackling and singeing, even at this distance. A body on the floor in front of him, and, with a sick lurch, Bob realizes it is Pete. His eyes open, his neck hanging open, too, just a slash of meat. "Frag," he says tenderly, closing his eyes and then tearing off Pete's white T-shirt, ripping it in half right down the front. Rolling sideways into a bathroom, Bob sees Chris in a corner, trembling, shaking, his left hand pressed to his right shoulder, moaning in pain, blood streaming thick between his fingers. Bob checking the wound quickly, telling Chris, "Frag," meaning stay here, as he dunks the T-shirt into the toilet bowl, soaking it, and ties it around his head. Glancing left, he sees orange and red blips whipping noiselessly past the window, and just has time to think, "Tracer. They're firing tracer rounds into a wooden building full of women and children," before he's rolling sideways back into the corridor on his belly, a SWAT uniform appearing in front of him, and Bob shooting him twice, right in the chest, a fast double tap, then crawling over the body. The guy's speaking, trying to say something to Bob through a gurgle of blood, heading for the doorway to the burning hall. J.C. comes round to the sound of a rifle cracking close to his right ear, firing several shots in quick succession, the concussion deafening him. To his left, he sees Morgan and Becky, Morgan holding her tightly while she cries and struggles, trying to run out into the whipping storm of bullets, saying something over and over again that J.C. cannot hear, but that he knows is, "The boys, the boys." He turns to his right and sees the long rifle barrel protruding from the window just a foot or so from his shoulder. Deke Rennett behind it, pumping the trigger, a terrible snarl across his face. "Should have listened to the guys and kicked them out of here. I'm sorry." There is a pause in the firing and the rifle tilting upwards as Deke goes to slam another magazine in there, and Jesus jumps across and grabs the barrel, pulling it down and away from Deke, clean through the broken window. Jesus hefts the rifle up and tosses it out into the open. He falls back down into the ditch in time to see that Deke is shouting at him through the window as he reaches behind his back and pulls out a chrome pistol. "Becky. Should have listened to Becky and dumped all those guns in the lake. I'm sorry." Deke pulls the slide back on the pistol and levels it at Jesus. And then there is an explosion of gunfire somewhere behind and above them, and Deke Rennett's body simply seems to vaporize in a pink mist as the helicopter gunship roars straight overhead, its minigun still firing, a rainbow of burning tracer tearing up the building and arcing over the roof and off into the Texan sky, the big wind turbines turning over impassively behind it all. Bob reaches the doorway leading into the main hall. It's just an inferno in there. Burning timbers falling, the Christmas tree over on its side, flames from floor to ceiling. Fuck it. Into the inferno, no time to crawl or take any kind of cover, just a full tilt sprint, clutching the wet T-shirt to his face, feeling the flesh on the back of his hands burning off, barreling straight through. Crying out as he feels one, two, three bullets hit his left side, thigh, abdomen, biceps. Hoping he'll have enough strength to make it. Coming smashing through the door and throwing himself onto the floor. The smoke so thick, visibility just a couple of feet. Bob crawling forward, pulling himself with his elbows. His left leg numb now, blood filling his boot as he sees them. Miles and Danny, still under the bed. Good little boys doing just what their mom told them to do. Danny, crying, cradling his little brother, who lolls unconscious against his shoulder. His lips blue against his milk-white face as Bob gathers them to him, the bedclothes above them smoking hot now, too. Not much time. On so many levels, not much time. The wall with the window, but the window is melting. Just a furnace. Forget it. No way back across the hall, either. Barely made it through the first time. The back wall of the bedroom, wooden, giving out onto the yard. Bob levels the M16 and empties the mag into the wall, vaguely hoping there's no one he cares for standing on the other side. Schlocks another mag in there and empties it, too. Then another. Bob putting nearly 100 rounds through the wooden wall, close grouping at point-blank range. Searing pain all up his left side, fluid, blood, sloshing in his lungs now as he picks up the boys and gets to his feet, mostly using his right leg, the left about gone. He runs at the wall and leaps, turning around in midair as he reaches it, Danny screaming, "Mommy!" Bob screaming too as he slams his right shoulder and back into the shredded, smoking timber, all 6.5 feet and 230 pounds of him hitting it with everything he has. Outside, Morgan and Becky look on, stunned, as a few yards away the back wall of the house seems to explode outwards, and Bob comes flying through, clutching the boys to his chest. The surreal sensation of going from a black, hellish, boiling room into bright, clear sunshine in a split second, Bob still clutching the kids as he falls through 6 feet of cold winter air, breaking his hip as they land on the concrete path, Miles cutting his forehead open but waking up, coughing and retching, the kids struggling to get up and away, but Bob still holding them tight to him, knowing the firefight is still raging. Then he hears Becky crying as she crawls towards them, and he lets go. JC's face appears above him, luminous, as a black helicopter banks across the blue sky behind him. Bob tries to speak, but tastes thick, coppery blood in his throat. JC is stroking his face tenderly, pushing the hair out of Bob's eyes. He's smiling. Becky's face dips into the picture, too. She's crying and saying something as she bends to kiss him. But Bob can't really hear anything anymore. Just a whooshing sound in his ears, like when you put a seashell to your ear when you were a little kid and they told you it was the sea you could hear. The helicopter banks back overhead again, lower now, starting to blot out the sun behind JC, its blades looking like they're in slow motion. Bob feeling cold, like he heard so many guys say they felt back in the day. Bob needs to speak, has something he needs to say to JC, a word that needs to be dredged up through the blood and lead and pain in his chest. His lips are moving, his top teeth touching his bottom lip as he searches for the fricative. Jesus leans in close to him, his pale blue eyes calm and clean amid this hell. Bob says with great effort, Jesus taking his hand now. Jesus kissing him softly on the lips, getting some blood on his face.
Friend,
Bob says for the first time in 38 years. For the last time, too. As the light starts to fade, as the cold he's feeling starts to thaw, getting replaced by a warm glow Bob's never heard about, as he starts to feel every atom in his body coming apart, he sees the single tear going down JC's right cheek, and a rifle barrel appearing at his left temple as the black shapes of SWAT troopers loom behind him. The last thing Bob sees as he dies is Jesus putting his hands up in the air.